to start by asking the council members to just introduce themselves one more time so that you can kind of hear them. So,
my name is Michael Wojcik. I'm a third-term council member here in Rochester.
Annalisa Johnson. I am the representative for Ward 6, and this is my first term, the brand new one.
And Roscoe, first ward, fifth term, and last term.
No. All right. Is that the first time we've said that?
Just to clear that out. You stayed around the at-large city council.
Mark Hickney, I'm Ward 5, so called Northeast Rochester.
Nick Campion, nice to see you again. Ward 3.
I'm Mark Bilderbeck, representing Ward 4, which is most of downtown and southeast, third term.
Nice to meet you guys once again.
Steve, our format today is that we have eight interview questions that we would like to read to you. I will be giving you the question, and we will give the council members an opportunity for feedback.
Okay.
We will have time for them to ask you some questions at the end. If you have a question, we'll see how that fits in, and also time for a closing statement. So that's,
okay.
And I'll be monitoring our time today, as I've done in other interviews. So let's begin with the first question, and that is, what trends will municipal organizations need to address in order to thrive in the 21st century? How are you beginning to address these trends in your current community?
I think the key trend in terms of making sure that you have a successful and effective local government is really working in partnership with others. And it's working in partnership internally between a city administrator and the council. It's a partnership that a city administrator has with the leadership team in the organization, and as importantly, it's the partnerships and the collaboration that happen with the other organizations and members of the community. That could be local organizations, regional, state, really I think the key is, in terms of being sustainable, we need to find ways to work together to really leverage resources. I have a belief that local government has a responsibility to deliver services, though not always the responsibility to deliver the service, if that makes sense. And during my career, I've tried to strive for that by working with other organizations. A good example is our partnership with the YMCA of Silicon Valley. We opened a 52,000 square foot recreation center when I was joining the city at the time. And rather than just the city running the facility, we actually entered into a partnership. And different than a lot of things that happen across the country, where typically a city may have the capital funds to build a facility, a rec center, and the YMCA will come in and run it for a community and maybe lease it for a dollar. We actually work in partnership where about 50% of the team is from the city, 50% is from the YMCA. And it's really paid dividends, not just financial, but it's paid community and social dividends. And just from a financial standpoint, from a sustainability, when we first started that, we had about a $1.6 million investment into recreation services at the time. But due to some of the things that we were able to do in that partnership, in just about four short years, we were able to take that annual investment down to zero. And but our growth in membership, and so today we have over 15,000 members. We're a community of about 45,000, about 80% are residents. So you can see the penetration rate is extremely high. And so that's one example. Another is we reestablished our fire department. We actually used a contract with our county, and about 4.5 years ago now, we reestablished it. We bought back our stations, bought new apparatus, and rather than hiring our team, we did an RFP to see who could operate our service for us. We ended up selecting the state of California, Cal Fire. They also provide service to the south of us, and so we work in a full boundary drop in the region. Once again, a significant savings. We estimated about $800,000 a year savings in that. We actually, the first year, realized about $1.2 million, and we've sustained that into the future. And we're also doing that just throughout Morgan Hill in a variety of different ways. We do many things that we partner. For many years, we've worked with our neighboring community, Gilroy. We jointly own our wastewater treatment plant there. So we found ways to leverage resources that way. And it's really something that we pride ourselves on. It does a few things. One, we're able to get the skills, expertise, resources of other organizations that really bring things that we may not do. And then at the same time, we're able to bring forward the things that we're good at. And one of the things that's been really nice, going back to the partnership with the Y as an example, is one thing they brought us was a way to really work with our members on member satisfaction. And so we use something that's called the SEER survey. It's out of Tampa. And we actually go through an annual process where we do a customer satisfaction survey. And so we learn a lot about ourselves. But rather than just comparing ourselves to last year of ourselves, we compare ourselves to about 400 different facilities around the country. And so we can really gauge what we're doing right, what we're not, and what are some other ideas. And so kind of rolling that up to conclude this answer, working in collaboration with others is just something at the heart of what we do in Morgan Hill. It's something I truly believe in. As I said, I think we need to deliver the services, though we need to find those most creative, economical, and sustainable ways to deliver them. And I look forward to trying to do that as well here and continuing what's happened in Rochester and hopefully looking for other partnership opportunities.
Councilman, excuse me, we will have to turn
that off.
Okay. There's a button right there to turn it on.
Hello. It's on.
Oh, it's on. Okay, there
red's
you go.
On. Okay.
There you go.
Better?
Councilman. Yes.
Right. You want me to repeat that?
Repeat the whole
question. No.
Work with others.
We do have a follow-up question.
See, one thing you said in there about the fire service people, were those not city employees then, or are they like contract employees, or because I did it, or those city employees?
Through Cal Fire?
Yeah.
They are state employees.
Yeah, so yeah. They don't come in under your payroll. Like, you have to probably pay a contract amount for them and something.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a formula that's set. Yeah. And we're in the process of renegotiating that extension of that partnership right now.
You mentioned the Boys and Girls Club and building a partnership with, I believe it was the Boys and Girls Club.
YMCA.
YMCA.
Yep.
Well, that gets right to my answer or question is, how have you balanced within your community the different organizations that look to partner? And how do you get away from the feeling of the city being a kingmaker when picking an organization to partner with?
That's a good question, and I can specifically talk to the Boys and Girls Club because many years ago we were renovating one of our facilities. We started down the path of renovating it when the Y was there, another organization, and we stepped back and said, why don't we look at this as maybe a nonprofit service center? And so we reinvested about $2 million of our redevelopment funds into it, and then ultimately went through a process of trying to find organizations that are advancing the goals and philosophies and priorities of the council. And so we have five different groups in there now. And then we also work with the Boys and Girls Club to run what's called our El Toro Youth Center. And so we really want to make sure that we're aligned with the organizations. I don't think we have any preset notions of who they are. In fact, we're going to go through a new RFP right now to run our what's called our Outdoor Sports Center. It's a 40-acre site that right now the Morgan Hill Youth Sports Alliance runs for us. And what we try to do is establish criteria up front that are very objective, we believe, that lay it out so it's open to anyone, and then go through that process like you guys have done with some of your recent decisions and work through it and see which ones really meet your goals, your long-term strategies. You may have to weave a little throughout that because you learn things along the way, but ultimately when we bring something forward to the council, we're really looking to set out what we started and what are those philosophies. And so that's, we try to balance it out that way.
We'll move to question number two. Describe the nature of the relationship you will create with the city council. How will you communicate with us and engage us as a body of seven equals in policy discussions?
Well, the first question talked about what's it going to take to be successful for local government in the future, and I think it's the same for the relationship between a city administrator and the council members in the seven in this case. And it's really, I'd say using the word partnership again, trying to build a partnership individually with each of you so I really understand what are the things that you're striving to do individually as an elected official, and then taking that and having that partnership amongst all of us as the body of the city council and the city administrator. I think that's important. I think it's key. The relationships that we have are going to be able to really set the stage for me to be effective, to provide you policy guidance and the thoughts and ideas on things that are happening in the community. At the same time, hopefully having that trust and respect and from confidence from all of you to share things with me that I need to know in regards to where you'd like to see either a specific project that's going forward right now. Because that'll be helpful if we're on the same page, then myself working with the professional team here and other members, other people that may be involved in it, I really have a full picture. And so I think it's a two-way partnership, if you will. two-way communication. And my role, I think a lot of responsibility is on my shoulders. I need to make sure that I communicate with you. I would want to make sure that I communicate to all of you. One of the things is if things come up, I prefer to share that with the council so the council understands. So I think it's important that you guys have the full knowledge of what's happening at the same time. Do that through, and it's up to each of you individually. If you want one-on-one meetings every week, we have one-on-one meetings every week if there's a different way. But right now with the city council in Morgan Hill, we have a different way. There's five members, and each of them are a little different. The mayor's there much more often, so the mayor and I can just pop in and out and discuss things, you know, along the way. Other council members at work, we find time. Some of us, you know, do a little more email communication. Others like to come in face-to-face. Some of it just depends on the issue or policy or project or idea that may be in their mind or something that I may need to sit down one-on-one with each of them and just talk through something that's coming so they're well-informed and some of the thinking that we have going on to see if we're aligned with what the thinking is of the council. So I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all in terms of communication. I think it's just an ongoing effort. It's understanding what's working, what's not with each of you. I'd ask that each of you provide that input to me. Is it effective communication? Are things I'm missing? Are things that you'd like to hear more of? Or maybe there's things you just want to hear less of. That's what we hire you guys for, to do and go do that. And so, I think it's somewhat open-ended, but at the same time, it's really just developing that individual relationship. And at the same time, all of us recognizing that ultimately, you know, I work for the seven of you as a body, and we move forward to try to make you as effective elected officials as possible.
Follow-up questions? Let's move to question number three. What has been your involvement in major development projects in your community? Please give us an example that shows how you keep the city council apprised of issues in progress related to large-scale developments.
I mentioned to the leadership team yesterday that the style that I typically employ is I'm typically engaged at the forefront of the discussion, so maybe with the developer, some of the ideas that are coming to you, and having those conversations with myself, our economic development director, maybe community development there, police and fire can be there, just depending what it is, and then see if we're aligned, once again, with the developer, and if we are, then just kind of set the parameters, and then I step away typically and let the team start to work on that project and obviously check in as necessary. And so that's kind of my overarching style of operating in those. I'm going to use our downtown as a good example, and this may go into other questions depending what they are. But our downtown was an area that when I became city manager, we were just wrapping up or trying to resolve a lawsuit with the state and the county in terms of the funds that were available to us through our former redevelopment agency. And one of the things that we had to do as part of that by state law is put together what's called a long-range property management plan. And so it's a document that is required by state law, once again, that sets the stage and expectations for each parcel that you own and how you're going to dispose of it. Ultimately, the successor agency, which is our city council, has to approve it. There's an oversight board of the taxing jurisdictions that has to approve it, and then the state has to approve it. I was intimately involved in that. Why I tell you that is because that led then to the redevelopment of each site. And we're actually right now, many of those sites are being redeveloped. And so as we went through an RFP process, we had in a room like this, we had our Economic Development Corporation, our chamber, our downtown association, members of the council, members of the professional team, working together on what's going to happen for each of these sites. And we wanted to make sure that we were consistent with the downtown specific plan, the vision that the community had adopted in 2009. And so as we went through each site, we had to really look at what was the goal for that site, and then what did the state law allow. And that was the almost the first year of my time as city manager, being intimately involved in that. Ultimately, as we started to go to RFP, we got some responses that we thought were acceptable and met our goals, and we started down the path of putting the documents together to sell those. But then we had other sites, like the one at Key at 3rd and Monterey. Monterey would be like Broadway here, a very key spot. And we didn't get the proposals that we wanted, and so we actually stepped forward and made the recommendation that the city buy the property. And we knew we were going to then move it forward with another developer, but we did not want it just to go to a developer that was going to buy it for speculative development. And so we wanted to control the site, and so I was intimately involved in that part. Today, There's about $80 million of investment going on in our downtown, the private sector in each of those sites. And in this case, you know, I played a significant role in making sure that how those sites are developed, what they're developed and being developed in. And so we have housing going in, some higher density housing, especially for us. We have additional retail and restaurants going in. What we're saying, we save the Granada, which is our historic theater, not to the same historic as a National Registry historic, but it's been in our community for many years. That was going to be torn down and put housing there. We didn't like that idea, so we found someone that was going to restore it for us. They now are restoring that and building the Granada Hotel, a boutique hotel next door to it. So through this process, we've ended up really achieving some of the things that we didn't think were going to be possible, like getting a boutique hotel downtown. And I'm proud to say that, you know, it was a key factor in that.
Follow-up questions.
As you've been redeveloping the parts of the core of the city, have you put any policies in place to address the affordability of housing? Because I know in your part of the country, it's a particular issue.
Yeah. It's interesting. The issues you're facing here are the exact same we're facing. Just the dollar amount for the units and the land is just the difference, really, otherwise. But we're all short units. We have a long history of being a leader in affordable housing. In fact, 1 in 8 units right now in Morgan Hill is affordable, which we're extremely proud of. And that's because of the policies that we have in place. One is through our RDCS, and I don't want to get too detailed, but we have a residential development control system that's been in place since 1977, voter initiated and voter approved, that really guides the development of housing. And part of that is a requirement for affordable housing. In fact, right now it's 8%, it has to be affordable. And then also as part of our annual competition, so you have to compete to build in Morgan Hill, there's a 20% set aside of annual allocations. And so that plays into any of the housing downtown as well. And then if not, there's there's in-lieus that the council just approved a $12.92 per square foot in-lieu fee for those that aren't providing the affordability. So we would prefer that units are built and not provided the in-lieus.
You're probably pretty aware of the big DMC initiative that's going on here in Rochester, and I think with that, there's not always everybody seeing eye to eye, and the big picture everyone agrees with, but trying to get through is a bit of a challenge sometimes. How do you view this, and what can you do to assure that all people involved are going to be able to see their projects forward and get things done in the best way possible?
From the DNC specifically? DMC?
Right. Yeah.
Specifically?
Yeah. Because we have a DMC group that maybe is off doing their thing in the city. How do you pull it together to make sure we're all seeing the best possible?
Yeah. I think that the baseline for that is the open communication between the city, amongst the city, and then all the different entities, the mayor being a key driver. I know there's the DMC board, then there's the EDA, and I think the DMC EDA is a key piece to this, making sure that we're aligned. Obviously, there's a lot of private investment, the majority is going to be private investment, and there's a lot of things that the city, through our public funds, can do. And I think moving forward, it's really making sure that as the public investment is happening, that the things that all of you and the community and the team set out to do at the beginning, once again, are what you're accomplishing with those dollars. And as you're driving those dollars, which I understand the city is more upfront, so there's a little more, I don't know if it's risk, but there's, you're putting your money up front. That, because of that, I think there's also some ability to leverage that if possible, to say, we're making our public investments, and in return, we want to continue on that path of the private. In something this large, obviously, you have to have a long-term vision. You can get bogged down in the day-to-day details, which are going to be extremely important. But at the same time, you have to sometimes maybe step back and realize, okay, how important is this detail compared to what we're trying to accomplish? And just like anything, there's going to be the give and take in those areas. I think from our perspective, meaning the city, we'd really want to make sure that we're holding true to what the intent and the goals of the DMC are. And then what are the ways that we're doing that? What are the ways that the other people, the private investment, and then where are those collaborative ways that we're doing it? And, this is a difficult one because DMC is so big, and it's a community building exercise in my mind compared to a growth of the Mayo. But the things that you guys have in there from transportation and just the placemaking, all that, it's going to include everyone, the arts, et cetera. So it's much bigger than just the few groups that I named so far.
I have a multi-spanning kind of follow-up. I think I've counted at least 7 mentions of goals. And one of the challenges we've been trying to address as a council is goal setting. How have you helped your councils set goals, and how will you bring that, or how will you see engaging us in the goal setting process?
When I became the city manager, we used our annual goal setting, what we called retreat at the time, as the time to do the handoff. It's a day and a half workshop, and so the city administrator at the time did the review of the past year. Lunch came, Ed just kind of slipped out the door. I then took the lead for the rest of the day, moving forward. We do that every year. I would recommend that we would employ the same thing here. If it takes a day and a half, 2 days, a half a day, I'm not sure what that is for Rochester at this point, but I would strongly suggest that if you're not doing that, that's something we do. We also have a mid-year check-in, so coming up on August 4th, then the council, myself, city attorney, leadership team, all meet, and that's much more informal. That's where you just kind of see what's going on in terms of the priorities and goals that were set out. Stepping back to the annual retreat, we changed the name this year to an advance. And working with the council, it's like, you know, we really have to appreciate our history and our past, but these times should be set on looking forward. And so it may be just a word, but I think it also is symbolic of what helps guide the council in this discussion during that time that we're trying to look forward. And as part of that, to date, I facilitate that. That works for some councils. Others, you need to have someone facilitate for you, depending on the role that you want for the city administrator. But to date, it's worked. And so, you know, we could see if that would work here or not. At this point, I don't know that. But we just work through it, and we really look at, so individually, what do you want to do? And the council works through that. We provide, and we have post-it notes everywhere. And ultimately, we start to bring this down. And 2 years ago, we had so many things going on that the recommendation was, we just need to finish some of these. And so we went through an exercise, we called them pebbles. So we ended up with 44 pebbles on our list. And so rather than having these big rocks, we had 44 pebbles of rocks that we worked on. This year, we've accomplished a lot of those. So we talked about, now it's time for 5 boulders. There's 4 things that the council should really give us guidance on. And so by the end of our day and a half exercise this year, they focused in on, like I said, 5 boulders. So telecommunications is one, high-speed rail, which is something we could get into if you'd like to, inclusiveness and infrastructure. And we then roll that up into a document that lays out their long-term vision based on sustainability, what are their ongoing priorities that we reaffirm each year, and then what are the strategic priorities for the next 12 months. And that I would suggest maybe a process like that here.
Thank you.
That is another.
Yeah. You talked about theater or housing project, but historic. We're doing a lot of historic back and forth here in Rochester. Can you talk a little bit about your historic plans or what you've done in your city?
Yeah, so our historic plans and efforts have not been extensive as the conversations that this community and this council has had. We have worked in areas that, like the Granada Hotel, is not on the National Historic Registry. The sign itself is considered of local importance and historic, and so in that area, we brought forward some public funds to make sure that we restored and saved the sign, as an example. The private sector then is investing in the improvement of the building itself. We have what's called the Hiram Morgan Hill House, which is on the National Registry. That is our founder, Hiram Morgan Hill, thus Morgan Hill. Him and his wife and his family was major landowners. And so we just worked with the Historical Society, and the council just approved a new partnership with them for the city to take a more active role from a capital standpoint. They're operating it, but we're helping to restore the building to make sure that asset doesn't deteriorate any further. So there's some things that we've done in policy, but more of it is kind of put into practice and action of trying to move things forward.
Question number 4. What is your philosophy and approach to managing city finances and ensuring long-term financial health and sustainability as the city grows?
That was my philosophy. Well, sustainability.
Philosophy and approach.
Okay, thank you. Sustainability is what we're always striving for from a financial standpoint, and that's both short-term as well as long-term, and that's something that we've worked hard on in Morgan Hill, is making sure that we are sustainable. In fact, we have a sustainable budget strategy that's in place that we follow not only during the budget development but during decisions that are made into the future and throughout the year. And so really as we look at from a team in the budget development process, I was once again talking to the leadership team yesterday, that we start with a priority-based budget is what we like to call it. And it's really based on the priorities, once again, that the council sets out for us. We then work to align our resources with those. In our case right now, from our discretionary funds in the general fund, which are about taxes primarily, about 80% of that goes to our public safety services. It's resulted in a very safe community. And then we look at how we align the rest of those. And one of the things that we started a couple years ago was going to what's called a decision package. And so it's important to understand that if every department was just going to bring forward, we want to do the exact same thing as last year, which has never happened, but if every department said that, then we would just do the multipliers that we need to do and work on cost of living, what's happening with healthcare, et cetera, and bring forward a budget. So we're going to do the same thing as last year, and we'd make sure it's sustainable into the future. Though understanding that we always want to improve and enhance and move forward different policies and goals that you guys have, we have something called a decision package. And so for each enhancement to services, the departments need to complete a decision package. And it really starts, once again, with what are they advancing, what are they trying to accomplish with this. But to get to the financial part, then we're also looking, decision by decision, is this sustainable into the future? Is it a one-time expense for capital? Where are those funds coming from? Is it a grant? Have we received the grant? That's sustainability in those is much different. But when we start ongoing and adding teammates, for example, or an officer, you know, that's a multi-million dollar expense into the future. And so we take those, we roll those up, and then we provide the council, we used to provide them a five-year forecast, we now provide an eight-year forecast. And so we go out 8 years looking at, so what does this mean, and are we staying within your financial policies and goals, especially fund balance is a good example. Our council has a policy of staying at 25% of annual revenues as the fund balance. And we always strive then to make sure that the line as it goes out and the different decisions that we're making provide that. So we go 8 years because our retirement system, CalPERS, is now going on 8 years, providing this information. There's a lot of change, you know, going on in California. They've just reduced some of the return rates and stuff. So there's a big impacts coming to local government. And so we try to lay that out. So as we bring in a decision today that looks like, yeah, we have 40% in the bank. Let's hire that new officer. Well, what's happening into the future? And so the council can see that when we bring forward the budget as well as in decisions throughout the year.
Follow-up questions?
I've got one maybe on that. We've had the same leadership in our city for decades now, and it's, a lot of things have been done very well, but done the same way. How are you going to objectively look at, you know, kind of with respect to what we're doing, with the idea that maybe you see some things that could be done differently, maybe even the way the funding is allocated to departments mm-hmm. and so on. So how would you approach that in this job?
Well, first, one of the things, you know, I'm very interested in the Rochester City Administrator position, and I'm interested for a variety of reasons. One of the things, I don't want to just come in and have to manage the organization. I want to come in and look at ways of improving the organization and enhancing what we're doing. And that's to build off of the success of the past, obviously, and find the things that are working. As I mentioned to the panel on the first time that I was visiting here, I would really be in a listening mode to start. I think, regardless of the tenure, but it's absolutely incredible the tenure here with the former city administrator as well as a lot of the team that's here in place. And others in the community. So I would do a lot of listening to start. As part of that, you know, I'm assessing at the same time, and then ultimately I would be looking at ways of improving. Part of the listening, though, is asking the questions to people. They'd be asking you, the council, they'd be asking our leadership team and Gary and others, what's working, what's not, what are ideas that you have, maybe had for a while, and then start to talk through those, start to formulate my ideas and opinions, and I would sense whoever is the next administrator, you're going to be looking for that person to move the organization forward. And so I would want to build it off of what I hear, but at the same time take my experiences from working in Morgan Hill and New Brighton and other places and say, these have been successful there. Can those things be successful here? And then start to move down that path. But we really have to, I started this talking about collaboration and partnership. It has to be done that way. I would not come in and say, you know, this is how we're going to do it. Now, if there's something mission critical that's needed at times, that would happen. But most of the time, it's really trying to connect with the team and working through and say, hey, this makes sense. So then we're, you know, people are supporting it. Because if one person believes and supports it, with the other 850 and 7, if you don't, it's not going to be an enhancement. It's just going to be a time that wasn't well spent.
Follow-up
We will move to question number five. What experience do you have with developing and implementing a strategic plan for a municipal organization?
So the last couple of years, we have gone, I'll use the word assessment again, we have done a significant amount of assessment of our organization in different areas. And back to the council member's previous question, one of the things when I came in to be the city manager, I did the exact same thing. I did not want to step in from the community services director to the city manager and say, now this is how we're going to do things. And so I took my time to understand what we wanted to do. And so the last couple of years, we've done a significant amount of assessment of our different areas. Development services is a key one. Information services, code compliance, and our public safety. And so I'll speak specifically to that one. So we just adopted our first public safety strategic plan. And so we went through a multi-year process working with the departments, with the community. We had ICMA come in through their arm that does that. And really looked at what is the future going to hold for public safety services in Morgan Hill. Like I said, it's the number one priority in terms of where the funding goes, as well as what the community expects and what the council expects. And so we looked at some new approaches and thoughts of how we really make decisions on how we enhance public safety into the future. Because I think it's very easy to obviously say we want to add more personnel, we want to do this, but it has to be sustainable, it has to be strategic. And so as we developed the document, the key thing in fire is was asking the council if you want to continue with a very engaged department that's really looking at prevention, et cetera. And that leads into then when do you ultimately build what would be for us our third fire station. From a police standpoint, we had the conversation with the council and the community about a new approach to determining how many officers we need. Rather than just using the how many officers per thousand, was looking at what's called a PSI, and that's your police saturation index, I believe was exactly the title. And it's looking at where your officers are spending time. And what the goal was, and we brought forward a 60-40, where 60% of the time they're responding to calls that may come through 911, and then 40% of the time they're self-initiated. And we've learned that that our officers are even more effective when they have self-initiated time. That's when some of the car stops happen, and lo and behold, they uncover many things that are in that car. And so the council actually said, well, we'd like to be at 50-50, so what does that look like? And so we brought forward some ideas. And so that's just one example of a strategic planning process that we went through that ultimately the council adopted. I'd be happy to share other strategic planning processes that we've gone through. And we also just adopted our what we call a general plan, which is, in a sense, a major strategic plan that guides the development and growth of your city. So we've done many of those things the last couple of years.
Questions? We'll move to number six. Give us an example of how you would communicate to the public controversial issues for which the city has adopted positions, such as on policing and immigration, social equity, and climate change.
What I would hope as I had the opportunity to relocate to Rochester, one of the things that I would be doing is starting to develop those relationships once again with the press, with the community, with community members, with key organizations. And so starting to create that network or communication infrastructure. And so and that's important because of things like you just asked is I need the individuals that I can develop a strong relationship with that have the trust and confidence that what I'm gonna share with them is the honest opinions. And at the same time, as the city administrator, obviously I need to carry forward. One of my main jobs is implementing, carrying forward the things that you provide all of us the direction on. And so I think it's being very clear. It's explaining the why. I think one of the things that sometimes doesn't happen is the why part doesn't happen versus just saying this is where we're heading with, it could be immigration, it could be affordable housing, a transportation decision, a redevelopment decision, high density housing, whatever it could be. But the why part doesn't happen there. And so trying to connect the dots between the guiding policies and strategies of the council with how this advances those, why the council believes that these are the decisions that are best for the community, and then obviously being open to the conversation about that. As I mentioned yesterday in some of the questions, also as part of that, I think I need to continue to be open to there may be a morsel of something that someone brings up that's a very fair point. Maybe that wasn't considered during this. And I think if it's valid enough, I bring that forward to the council and say, this is something I'm starting to hear. And some of you may say, I've been hearing that too. I've been thinking about that. And there may be times that we have that communication coming the other way that actually enhances whatever the message is that I'm telling, or the policy or project. And so if there's specifics, if you did ask about immigration and inclusiveness, I don't know if there's a specific answer you're looking for in those areas, but I think that's the philosophy of how I would communicate, be it any of those. But I'm happy to follow up that I can delve down a little deeper if you'd like.
Any questions? Question 7, what role have you played in creating or participating in a public-private partnership? How did you balance the interest of your organization with those of the partnership?
So as we started our conversation today, partnerships have been a key part of our DNA in Morgan Hill, and so we have a lot of experience in that. From a true public-private partnership, I'm going to go back to the Granada Hotel, because that is a private entity. A lot of ours are public nonprofit, which have a lot of the same similar characteristics, but this is a little different when you get a public-private partnership. And as I mentioned, we had an RFP out. We had information come in, or responses come in, where someone wanted to turn that into housing and some retail below, and it wasn't what we wanted. And so as we went back to the working group, the committee I mentioned earlier, we started to throw out, what if there's a way of really trying to find someone that can save the Granada and at the same time look at reusing that site in a different way? And our goal was that hotel. In that case, and this is more of a development partnership, I went to lunch with the developer that put in a proposal and sat down and just talked about what he's trying to accomplish, what we're trying to accomplish. And in this case, we found some areas where we aligned. I brought forward a development partnership in this case to the council that met our goals, met a very much community debate about the Granada, if it was going to be saved or not. And so we were able to do that, brought that forward to the council. The council, I think, was very appreciative that we found a way to do this, to invest some of our bond funds. So that's more of a development-type partnership. From an operational standpoint, I've mentioned a couple that we already have in those. And the bottom line in any of the partnership success, we have people call us from around the country about our partnership with the YMCA, and they say, can you send me the document? I said, I'm happy to send you the document. But that document, if you're looking at that too often, you're not really in partnership, because that just lays the groundwork. It's about the people and that relationship that you build, and that's the key. Is it the YMCA? Is it Boys and Girls Club? Is it Cal Fire? Is it the entity that you guys are working with for the Armory? Are you aligned with them, and do you see a partnership? And that's really where the public-private, public-nonprofit, public-public has to come down to that you have similar philosophies for it to be successful.
Okay. Question 8. In the next few years, the city expects to see turnover in various staff leadership positions. A city administrator, what leadership management style characteristics will you look for when it comes to time to fill some of these positions?
That is going to be an amazing challenge / opportunity for whoever you guys select for this. The more I learn about this organization, and it's absolutely incredible. I don't think I've seen or heard of an organization that has the tenure and the knowledge and experience. And you drive around with Gary or whoever, and they can point out everything that's happened and when and how. And that's going to be a big loss for this organization. And so leading up to that, first and foremost, it's trying to do my best to glean as much as I can from the team. And just understanding that it's seeing what succession plans are in place to date to see if there are some as we work through departments. But ultimately, I would be looking for the people to fill those spots, be it internally or be it others that join the organization that truly and honestly believe in teamwork and team. And I think it's a key critical component for all our positions, but any of those leadership positions really need to understand that as a leadership team, we are representing the organization, the council, the community, and that there's an expectation that people work together, and it's not department by department, much more cross-department work. And people that have demonstrated that ability in either their career here or in other organizations. I mentioned yesterday that looking back maybe a couple of years, how would I assess if we've been successful in areas like that? If people really believe in the two letters of WE, and if they really truly believe in that, that's the type of people that I would strive to bring into the organization or promote in the organization. It's going to be a balance. I would hope that we would be able to have a balance of people that have worked here and can continue the success, as well as introducing some new teammates to the organization that can bring new ideas, can bring new approaches, can bring new experiences, and blend those together but like I started this is going to be one of the major challenges / opportunities for this organization and for the city administrator, and it's something that I'm going to rely on others to help me through, but it's something that I realize is probably coming sooner than I would want it to happen as the new city administrator.
Questions? Actually, I heard you say something about the different groups working together. Can you give me an example of how you've helped reduce silos in your organization?
Mm-hmm. One is, and I don't just use the word "use" word. It's really talking about we. When we have our leadership team meetings every week, all the department heads are there, and we're talking about the organization. And so it's important that we talk about what's happening in each of the different departments, but at the same time, how does that all roll up to what we're trying to accomplish together? And really me, including them, in some of the key things that are happening. So people see themselves, if you will, as all assistant city administrators, assistant city managers sitting around the table. They're not just the director of community development and the police chief and fire, but they're a team that's working on organizational related issues. So that's a key part of it. Then when it comes time for a project, for example, I think our downtown is a good example. The downtown, one could look at was a redevelopment effort, so redevelopment and maybe community development should be involved. But we didn't go about it that way. We had public works, we had economic development, we had community development, we had police, we had fire, we had community services, all as part of the team orchestrating how the downtown redevelopment was going to happen. And I think that demonstrated to everyone that's how we need to work together. You share a lot of different ideas and opinions when you do that. They would meet weekly, and it was amazing the things that they debated and discussed, and at times asked me to join them in the room. I tried to stay out if I could. And it was really because, as the saying goes, you know, you put the many different minds and thoughts and opinions, and you end up getting a much better result. And so we try to demonstrate that through our projects and how we bring people together, how we develop policies, and then ultimately it's a day-to-day. And I would suspect if you went and asked our department head team, they would say one of the key things that of my expectation is that they don't operate in silos. And there's a recognition and understanding of that, and I think that's where it kind of starts, and then you build from there.
Okay, I saw multiple. We'll just go down the road.
That kind of ties right into this, but you know, you emphasize we a lot and working together. What if, as you get in here and you're dealing with some of these different departments, you find people that you don't feel are cutting it or aren't kind of going down the road that you believe mm-hmm. is the way to go? Have you ever had that happen before? And if you did, here, how would you deal with it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying that you know that the sun is always shines a lot, but it's always sunny in Morgan Hill. There's times where, you know, the philosophies that you're trying to instill in everyone, especially as someone new, may not be going down the path. So I'll use an example of someone that has joined us. And, you know, you go through the process. Yes, I think this individual and the team thinks this individual is the person we should bring in. And then you start to talk, and then you start seeing things in action, and you realize that, well, maybe the way we use we in partnership and no silos is a little stronger than other places. And so you sit down and just start talking through expectations, and you know in a very positive way, and work through it. There's also times where you know, it may be someone that's been with us for a long time that even in certain things start veering a little way, and it's just talking about it. It's never letting it become an issue. I think that's the key thing. If it does, it starts to fester, and then we all know what happens with that. And you know, areas that you're trying to, especially in leadership positions. If you're not on a common page, that doesn't mean we're all the same philosophy, you know, that we're all in agreement on everything, but it means the way we operate is collaborative.
Steve, can you give an example of how you perhaps actively engaged or cultivated or prepared staff for transition or career opportunities, you know, in other words, grow the organization?
Mm-hmm. We call it building our bench. Really looking at how do you build your bench, and it's through a variety of things. Within our organization, it's looking for one of our core values is professional growth. And it's really looking at how can everyone develop in their jobs, be it if you're in our maintenance division, if you're a police officer, if you're a planner, if you're in recreation. And so we look at ways of how people can develop their skills, either through on-the-job training. We do a lot of giving people opportunities, especially as any organization evolves and you have transition in positions. We look at ways of giving people opportunities in areas that may be above where they're at today, and that really helps set the stage. It's asking people what type of training do they want, what type of training do they need. We work in different formal settings as well. We have what's called our Santa Clara County Leadership Academy, and so that's a 9-month process that cities and larger agencies like the Water District and County, VTA or Valley Transportation Authority all send. About at the end of the day, we have about 24 to 30 people from throughout the region that go to this, and it's led by a former city manager, and it really talks about who they are as leaders. I mentioned to the team yesterday, it's talking about your leadership fingerprint, and so it's a way of them learning about themselves, and then they bring that back to the organization, and then you know hopefully we build on that, and we find ways that we can give them a chance to promote. There's another thing called our Management Talent Exchange Program, MTEP. It's an every-year program that's regional as well. That is another way of people going out. You basically trade teammates for a 3-month period. They typically go to a different, well, they do go to another organization, an area that they don't typically work in, and they gain new skills that way and experience with different organizations. And so we have some formal practices, but a lot of it is the day-to-day. We've had a lot of transition recently, and we've had probably a balance of bringing in new teammates as well as promoting those. I always kid around that our community services department should receive a stipend from all the other departments, because I can't even count how many people have come through our part-time team working on our rec centers. They gain great customer service, and then and this is good, because then they join us full-time, typically not in community services, though. They're in planning, and they're in other areas, community development. And so we just try to build that. We try to instill that, and then we try to demonstrate it by, I think, some of those things, like I just said, by hiring some of those individuals that have spent sometimes up to 10 years maybe working at your aquatic center, and then they get a chance to be a human resources assistant and hiring them. And that just then, I think, sends a message and signal to the rest of the organization that there's opportunity here, and we support you to try to build that.
Another question? Okay. Council members, it's time that we have about 10 minutes for you to ask questions of Mr. Reimer. Any council member questions?
We just had a 20-year study for our park department, and reflects that there's about a $77 million in needs out there that are basically unfunded for the next 20 years. If you had any kind of, I know you came from the rec department a little bit, so do you have any suggestions or ideas, or how might you try to attack something like that, tackle it, and try to figure out how to move it forward in a positive way for the community?
We are doing the exact same thing right now. We just completed our update. In fact, we merged our bicycle trails and parks into one master plan, because they really are encompassing. This may be the same. And we saw the same thing. We have about a little smaller city. We had about $70 to $80 million in needs and wants, and about $30 to $35 million in funding. So about half the gap, but a large gap. And so our first step was to go through a prioritization process with the Parks and Rec Commission, and ultimately the council, that the council just approved, and they're going to consider the formal adoption of the document next Wednesday. But then the real work begins. And so part of it is looking at what are our funding sources right now. We have park impact fees, we have recreation center impact fees, and so we have some of that we can forecast in the future. But part of it's going to be going back to partnerships once again. And we just purchased 26 acres for our next sports complex. This one's going to be used softball and baseball, but we don't have the funds. So we own the land, we don't have the funds, and so we will go through a process of looking with different providers that may be able to bring us ideas on that. There are some private entities that run those. Obviously, there's trade-offs in those partnerships, as you guys asked earlier. And so we will be doing things like that. We'll find areas that we can leverage resources. We find areas that we can improve areas by using maybe other funding sources that are appropriate. An example will be in our downtown. We are building about $5 million of parks as our last piece. And one of the things that we had in there was we had a road that had its what we call a pavement condition index. I think you call it a SCI here, but very low, dirt almost in it. And so we're leveraging funds to actually integrate that in the park, but using some of our traffic impact funds and other funds that we have to try to facilitate more than just the park development. So look at things internally, and then look at opportunities, here if there's county opportunities. We do a lot with grants. The grants, grants are cyclical, as we all know, and they dry up at times and they come back. And so we're doing a lot with grants. And one of the things that we've been successful in is because of a couple census tracts within Morgan Hill, we're able to apply for some park housing grants, and so we utilize those as well. But then we can take some of the grants, and we've received upwards of $2 million in those. And then the last piece is one of our big initiatives is an inclusive playground. It's about a $5 million playground that we're going to be building. And in working with a nonprofit, and then the county board of supervisors stepped forward, and they put together a $10 million grant program. So we are going to be in the process of applying for $2 million for that. So I'll try to cover it. So just, it's really putting the puzzle together. Some are going to work, some aren't. And sometimes you can do it internal. Other times you need others to help you with some of those processes.
Other questions?
One of the important roles for a city administrator is representing the council's perspective on things. Can you maybe tell us of a time when you've been, when the council has decided something that you didn't necessarily agree with and the steps you went through to present that idea as the city's perspective?
Yeah. Well, bottom line, my perspective ends up being what your perspective is when you make a decision. I've always held to that. I've never personalized it. In fact, along the way, when you ultimately make a recommendation and council goes a different way, there's been times the next day that a community member or someone will come, well, I can't believe you didn't show any emotion. It's like, well, that's not my job. My job is to bring what I think and the team thinks is the best recommendation, but ultimately you guys are making the decision for the reasons that you find. One example of this is in 2015, we went through a complete street exercise for our downtown. It's about 6 blocks that stretch of Monterey. It's the former highway before Highway 101 was built, and so it still uses the main traffic corridor, but it comes right down through our downtown, right through all the key restaurants and outdoor dining and everything. And so we went through what's fashionably called a road diet exercise for 6 months, and we brought in, obviously the council agreed to this, and so we reduced the lanes, put in buffered bike lanes, is all for a 6-month trial so we could get data on what would happen from congestion to the use of bicycles and pedestrian safety to the time it would take for public safety vehicles and buses to get through the downtown, noise levels when you're trying to eat outside. And so we put together some pretty sophisticated metrics, measured them, and ultimately came forward at the end of that period, and we made the recommendation that it stays. This was a very engaged process for the 6-month period. In fact, our community engagement officer was basically, our manager, she was basically living in downtown, just walking and talking and meeting with residents and people that are down there and understanding what they liked and didn't like. Ultimately, we brought it forward to the council, and on a 4-1 vote, it was not approved. It wasn't approved because, for a couple of reasons, but one of the key things that they brought up is we don't have a strong western side north-south connection yet. And so people don't have an alternative route to use. We have it on the east side. And so really what came out of that was a heightened awareness of let's get that site built. And so we're actually in the process of working with the county to get about $10 million in grants to build that section right now. And our stationary master plan that's just coming out references coming back to that discussion again, because the council did leave the door open. But ultimately, as we talked about it, it's as I'm sharing it with the community or going to the chamber breakfast and giving them an update, it's the council made a decision for these reasons, and we're going to continue to do this and see if it's something that happens in the future. So
any other questions?
You made me think of something. You refer to the county a lot in your responses, and we've got a county here that's obviously really close with, and they've had a leader that's been there for the same amount of time, 40 years, and now he's leaving, so there'd be someone new there. So how do you, when you talk about the we thing, are you considering the city and the county a we do, or is that just going to have to be a relationship that you work to try to strengthen and make positive as much as possible, or have you thought about that at all?
I think the county, any of the public agencies, from the state for that matter, and the county, the school district, are all going to be key parts, and I would approach it as trying to operate in collaboration. There's going to be times where obviously we don't disagree, or we have the board has a different opinion than where the council's at. But professionally, I would hope we could work together and find those areas that the collaboration is appropriate, and areas that we just recognize that this is your domain, this is our domain. And so ideally, in the real world, everything is we, but I don't think it's going to be that rosy. But I do think the spirit of collaboration and cooperation is what we'd be striving for in terms of that relationship. And there's times, like I said, if you don't agree, you can disagree and still move forward to the next item and not have that influence what you just did in a previous meeting.
Anything else?
see any unique challenges or opportunities to running a city in Minnesota relative to where you're at now?
Yes, I mean, I think any state, and I think, you know, coming back to Minnesota, there'd be its unique challenges. Operating in California has been quite unique as well. Local control is something that is continually being discussed, and to what level. I think the example of the governor and ultimately the legislature dissolving our redevelopment agencies a couple of years ago. Ours was, you know, we had an increment of about $20 million a year, $4 million going to affordable housing. This was a big deal. And they ultimately, you know, dissolved them, and we've been working on that. And so the environment has been the same. There's a lot of discussions right now in California about local control and buy right for affordable housing. And so trying to take away the control of the cities in terms of their land use decisions. Fortunately, the League of California Cities has been able to work and hopefully come up with some things that balance both of them. And I would see that type of stuff happening here. What I've learned, I do believe that there are some things that can happen here a little more easily where your local controls is taken away, even maybe a little less process than I'm used to in California when the discussions are happening. So those are just things that, you know, I would have to have my radar up. I'd be asking the council to, you know, obviously the involvement with the League of Minnesota Cities and working with their executive director and just really understanding. Because, you know, Rochester obviously plays a key role as the third largest city in the state and some of the needs and wants and, you know, the economic engine that it is down here, you know, really making sure that we're at the table, and some of those decisions would be, I guess, how I would approach it at the same time, and, you know, working with others that have been much more involved in this process than obviously I have in Minnesota for many years.
We have 5 minutes remaining. So let's see if you have a question for the council, and we will then ask you the final question.
Okay. Really, mine is if there's anything that I've mentioned that you would like further clarification on, if there's things you haven't heard that maybe you want to ask me a question on, or if there's things that I can, you know, help add additional, I'd be happy to answer those at this point. Otherwise, this has been a great process, and I do appreciate being here.
I can think of one. I know you've been out in California for 15 years, but I noticed you're tired. Still a Vikings fan?
Oh,
there we go.
That's a religion question.
I'll offer it up as a candidate. So you didn't answer that, so I'll tell you. No, I bleed Minnesota sports. I've mentioned it to a few people here and others that, you know, I've gone to games out in California. It's not the same. You know, that 3rd-and-1, Niners make it or not, who cares? And the Vikings don't make that 3rd-and-1. You know, it's the same thing. And in fact, we had a chance to come back to the new stadium last year for the opener against the Pack. And so, it's who we are. I mean, you know. And we won.
We might have a Packer crowd or two other groups.
Yeah, that's,
you never know.
That's part of Minnesota.
Okay, here is the closing question, and aptly it begins. In closing, what ideas or value would you bring to the city of Rochester if you were selected for this position?
The ideas and value that I'd bring is, I think first and foremost, a true dedication to public service and to public administration, something that I've tried to grow every year professionally. By being in California now for the last 11 years, I've gained some additional experiences that I don't think I may have gained here if I stayed in Minnesota. And so in working in our affordable housing, working with our environmental initiatives that we've had, working on the collaborative approaches that we've had with other organizations, working on financial sustainability, working on finding ways to be even more of an inclusive community. Those are all things that I think I could add value. I could bring those here, help to continue to enhance the organization, the effectiveness of the council, as well as really, you know, making sure that at the end of the day, the vision that is set out is, you know, we can look back in those next 10 years and say we've achieved a lot. And I think some of my experiences, my philosophy, the way I operate, try to develop the relationships and really rely and work with others is something that could bring here and add value to the organization and to you as individual council members, as well as to the council as a whole.
Thank you. That's it. That's the end of the interview. You made it.
Well, I appreciate it. If I can just say a couple, I do want to thank the council again. This has been an extensive process. I commend you on really doing your due diligence. I want to thank Sharon for everything that she's done to lead me and obviously the other candidates through this. So I wish you the best of luck. I know it's not an easy decision, but I do appreciate being able to sit here in front of you today. So thank you.
Thank you.
you.
I know.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you once again.
Viking question.
Your coffee should have been at the other end.
I actually almost
said
you
could put it last term. So the answer.
How long does this record, I wonder?
Breaks, I guess.
Sometimes people get out.
There's no way it's going to go 4 hours.